are watching Game Time Decisions. I am Gabriel Morenzi. Welcome to the program that puts his money where his fantasies are on the Fantasy Sports Network. We're set up in the bunker. We're not really live, but we're live to tape. And it's close enough to live that we're breaking down tonight's games. We're talking NBA basketball. Paul Bovey is going to step up and in and join us. We're on the gauntlet with Bovey, Vegas Insider, RDS Television, Pete Annapolis, former assistant coach with the UMass and Minutemen will join me. My NFL mock draft continues. We go from pick 25 through to pick 29 on the program today. I got a ton of picks for you. All that and more on today's Game Time Decisions. Game Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues. I am Gabriel Morenzi, and as you can see, we're in the bunker this afternoon. But you know what? It's all good because we're talking basketball with Paul Bovey, a regular contributor to Game Time Decisions throughout this NBA playoff run. We're just getting started. The dogs have been barking so far through the first half week or so of the playoffs. We're already in to the Game 3 settings. We have the Cleveland Cavaliers and the Indiana Pacers, the Raptors and the Bucks, and the Spurs and the Grizz on the board tonight. Paul, it's always a pleasure, my man. How you doing?
Great, Gabe. Always a pleasure to be here.
So let's jump in here. The Pacers are 2-0, but they're 2-0 in Vegas. They're 2-0 with guys like you and me, but they're 0-2 in the real world. And they'd rather be the other 2-0 right now. But Pacers are hanging around in this series. Day late, dollar short, both games.
Yeah, they're hanging around. The Cleveland Cavaliers' personality has not changed, Gabe. They're just not playing a lot of defense. Pacers are shooting after game one, 40 of 81. Then they come in game two, shoot better than 50%. But they are not stopping the Cavaliers, who from inside the arc, in these two games are 60 of 95. That's quite a percentage. And you know they're going to hit some threes. And the big three did step up in game two, 31 of 51 from the field. Love had 11 rebounds. LeBron had double-digit rebounds. And it's a matter of Cleveland just outscoring them.
Well, let's talk about the total here and them outscoring them. So they put up 117 in game one, 109. 117 in game two, 109 in game one. The last time they played in the regular season, a game you and I talked about last week, 135-30 in overtime. Cleveland scored 113 against them before that, 132 before that. And here we have the total once again, a manageable total on the board here. How do we not go with the over once again, Paul?
It's hard to side with the under because, again, the point that was just made, neither team is stopping the other team. And especially you look at the Cavaliers, how much defense are they playing in the fourth quarter? Are they putting forth a full effort, or is LeBron James just down a few notches when it comes to defense? And I think it's part of the latter. He's not the same player he was 5 or 6 years ago. And Indiana is having their way with them late.
Yeah, they're having a hard time with their switches and their rotation still. And another thing is too, Paul, they know they're winning anyways, right? So, and they know it's a long haul. So I'm sure in the back of their minds, we can play better defense, guys, and we'll ramp it up as the playoffs go on. But, hey, we're winning right now, and they're not going to outscore us. Because it seems like no matter how good the Pacers score, because generally if the Pacers are scoring 109, 108 points in a game, generally they're supposed to win that game. So the Pacers are actually scoring more than they normally do. But it's just not enough. And the thing, it's amazing here, this incredible stat. What is it? Is it 19 games in a row now? LeBron's won in the first round, 18-19. The guys have lost the first round playoff game since 2012. Does he lose this one? Did the Pacers get this done?
I don't think so. Dave, I want to believe the Pacers will get this done. But look, and only because I have the Chicago Bulls to take it all, so of course I want the Pacers to win it. I mean, my chances are light years better if Indiana emerges from this series, but I doubt it's going to happen. And look, let's hope for a competitive game three, and if in your case, a high-scoring game, because I know you're going to the high side, and you've been successful in game one and game two, so why get off the bandwagon now?
All right. So the over did cash in the Raptors and the Bucks game in game two. We have a total of 197 here. The Milwaukee Bucks are now 1.5-point favorites. I expected Milwaukee to compete with the Raptors. I didn't think it was going to be an easy series for the Raptors, but I thought the Raptors would sort of win, you know, in five and, you know, a bunch of close games. You know, the Raptors were victorious in game two, but they really didn't look very good doing it. A positive sign was Kyle Lowry wasn't fully back, but he was better. We expect that from Kyle, though. He struggles, and he bounces back in the next game all the time in the playoffs. And he did the zigzag last year almost every game in the playoffs. I don't know if the Raptors are complacent. There's some of the body language I don't like. I love the fact that Lowry hit a big shot late in game two. And I know the Raptors pretty well, and I know his body language pretty well. And it was almost like a breakthrough moment. You could tell, like, he hit a late jumper, you know, to the late insurance basket for the Raptors. It was a big shot with the shot clock expiring. I think it might actually help the Raptors getting on the road. And I think the Bucks, being a young team, might get caught up in the home hype a little bit. I think the Raptors get it done.
Well, those zigs and zags last year were some long lines because Kyle Lowry went through some real funks in that Miami series. But he got it turned around quickly here. And frankly, I was really surprised he did that because he looked really shaken in game one.
Well, he was terrible in game one.
He stepped up. He did step up. But it took him 25 converted three-point shots out of 52 attempts to score 206 points. And the Raptors improved their percentage significantly over that 5 of 23 in game one. I'm going to look to the low side here. I these teams didn't penetrate the paint all that much in game two. They combined for 60. And I think the total at 197, I think it'll come back to game one where they totaled 180. And I think they'll end up at about 190, 191. As far as side goes, Gabe, I think Milwaukee can play with this team. And I thought they could play with this team as they entered into this series. They outscored them in the paint during the regular season. It was even last night, two nights ago. I think this game will probably be close and low scoring.
You know, the Milwaukee Bucks, and you know, they don't even have Jabari Parker. I'm a big Brogdon fan. Kid's a hell of a player for a rookie. Plays above his years. The freak lives up to his nickname. I think the Raptors will get it done. But, yeah, they're in a dogfight here. This is a big game. A big game for them. And you know me. I'm an NBA over. Different sports I generally, you know, will trend one way or the other when betting totals. But I'm generally an NBA over better, but I'm in no hurry to run to the window to bet the over here either. I told people the same thing before the series started. I said, you know, I look at these totals, and I expect a lot of games in the 90s. You know what I mean? Like, you know, 98-96, 98-94 type of games, low 190s. And here we are at 197. You know, I don't know. I'm not in a hurry. And speaking of low totals, we got a real low total here. Now, we got lucky in garbage time in game one and got the over. Game two, couldn't get there because, you know, the inefficiency. And it's not just Memphis. This series, and you've been tweeting about it, it's the worst ever, Paul. It's bad basketball. It's painful to watch. I'm not even watching it. I watch everything. I don't even watch this crap. I tune in the last 6 minutes of the game and watch me get screwed on my bet all the time with these guys. But you notice between these two teams, there's always one team, Paul, that doesn't score. Like, one team will score, it'll be 29-12 one quarter, and then the next, you know, San Antonio will score 15 in the next quarter. Memphis will score 24. There hasn't been one damn quarter in this series besides the first quarter of the first game, where I think it was 30-22, that both teams actually put up a normal amount of points. It's been awful this series.
You're right, Gabe. And these two teams, notably Memphis, they go through droughts. I mean, they teased us with that over the other night. I got it live at 185.5. It's just languishing.
It was brutal.
They hit a few shots, and you say, okay, we got it. And next thing you know, another two-and-a-half-minute, no-scoring drought, and the number is sunk. It's hard to pinpoint this one, Gabe. I think it will tilt to the high side. You're getting a little bit of value here. And it remains to be seen if the coach's rant will affect the officials, because he did have a good point. Zach Randolph, not one free throw, 35 shots in the paint, only 15 free throws for Memphis, 18 shots in the paint, 32 for the San Antonio Spurs, including 19 by Kawhi Leonard, who made all 19 of them, which was pretty damn good.
Paul Bovey, you can find his selections over at VegasInsider.com. We encourage you to check out VI. It's a great, great website, wealth of information on every sport for the hardcore sports better. All right, Paul, before we get you out of here, and I always appreciate your time, Celtics and Bulls and Clippers and Jazz coming up tomorrow. You know, you and I have both been high on the Bulls. You pulled the trigger on them to actually win the championship. I thought they could beat the Celtics. Bulls are laying two, and L.A. and Utah Jazz minus one.
Bulls get no respect. They are still 90-1 to win the championship, even though they have a 2-0 lead on the Celtics and may face a very reasonable opponent in the second round. But look, the Celtics cannot stop this team in the paint. And I hate to be redundant, but I said it before game one. I said it before game two. And I'm going to say it here. They just don't have the horses in the middle. Al Horford, Kelly Olynyk, those are not the guys that are going to slow down the Bulls. So the only way the Celtics can win this game is to outscore them. And how much can you expect out of Isaiah Thomas? He is Superman, but look, he's done great things during the regular season. But at some point, everybody meets their match. As far as Utah and the Clippers, competitive series here remains to be seen if Rudy comes back. But I'm troubled with the Clippers, Gabe. I really am. You can't score more than, what did they score the other night, 90-something points against a team without their man in the middle that's using Jeff Withy at center. I don't know what's wrong with this team. 60 points in the paint. And they've got to do better, Gabe. Utah at full strength could give this team all they can handle.
Paul Bovey. Paul, it's always a pleasure, my man. Enjoy the games. We'll catch up with you next week.
Thanks, Gabe.
There's Paul Bovey with us on Game Time Decisions. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back with our NFL mock draft as we're getting into the mid-20s right now, but there's still some quality football players on the board. We have Pete Annapolis joining us in a couple of minutes as well to talk some basketball. Game Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues. Game Time Decisions on a Fantasy Sports Network continues. I am Gabriel Morenci. Let's jump back into our National Football League mock draft. Pete Annapolis will join us in a couple of minutes. We'll talk some NBA playoff basketball and take a look at the Boston Celtics and the Chicago Bulls game three. But we're now at the 26th pick in the NFL draft. And, you know, listen, even NFL teams that are drafting at this juncture will tell you we're just going to take the best available player. It's hard to predict who's going to still be available and on the board. But let's start off with the Seattle Seahawks with the 26th pick. And with the 26th pick, the Seattle Seahawks select Forrest Gump. Forrest Lamp. Sounds like a type of dude who would play at Western Kentucky. Offensive guard, Forrest Lamp. Lamp is a guy that's really, really impressed the scouts and really worked his way up the draft board. Listen, he played for the Western Kentucky Hilltoppers. Not a premium program, but an extremely well-coached program. The Hilltoppers have been a well-coached team over the years, from Bobby Petrino into Brohm, who's now with Purdue, right? So this kid has been very, very well-coached, and what teams like about this kid so much is Western Kentucky actually played a pretty tough schedule. They played against Alabama, and they played against LSU as well, and he held his own in both of those games, really opened up a lot of scouts' eyes. So if you look at the Seattle Seahawks, you know, they're talking about trading Richard Sherman. I don't think they're going to pull the trigger. I think Sherman will still be there right now, but the writing's on the wall. Sherman's not going to be there forever. You know, the whole Legion of Boom thing and all that. You know, Earl Thomas isn't getting any younger. The Seattle Seahawks as a whole, and I read an interesting story about this being the most important draft in years for the Seahawks because it's sort of a bridge. You know, they need to start thinking about the future. They're an aging football team. So they do have a lot of needs, actually, specifically on the defensive side of the football. But with that being stated, what's their biggest concern? The offensive line. Russell Wilson's been running for his freaking life for the last couple of years. And, you know, Russell Wilson, he got sacked 42 times. The Seattle Seahawks gave up 42 sacks, man. Only five quarterbacks were sacked more in the NFL than Russell Wilson was last year. And think about this. Think about how mobile Russell Wilson is. How many times have you seen Russell Wilson run and you're like, man, if that wasn't Russell Wilson, that quarterback would have been sacked. He would have been sacked like 66 times, like the Browns were, if it wasn't for us. Like, the guy is a super athlete running for his life, and he was still sacked 42 times. That's a freaking problem, man. You got to do something about it. Lamp not only has a cool name, but he's a 6'4", big ass, 320-pounder, played very, very good against elite competition. I'm not sure he's still going to be available, actually. The New York Giants supposedly like this guy a lot. The Broncos are in the mix. But I do believe that ultimately that Seattle will end up going with an offensive lineman here. I think they have to. Like I said, nobody got sacked more than Russell Wilson. Like they got serious problems. He can't, 42 times. Guy's running for his freaking life. Fifth most sacks in the NFL last year. It's a big problem. You know, looking at it, I can't believe the Cleveland Brown quarterbacks were actually sacked 66 times. That's a lot, man. Like, 60? We played 16 games. Really? Wow, okay. So that leads us to the Kansas City Chiefs. They're picking 27th. Kansas City Chiefs. And with the 27th pick in the NFL draft, I have the Kansas City Chiefs selecting Zach Cunningham, linebacker, Vanderbilt. You know what? The Kansas City Chiefs, they haven't had their success by being flashy. They're not a flashy, let's please, ESPN and take Johnny Manziel type of team. You know, the Kansas City Chiefs aren't like the Cleveland Browns. They're not asking homeless dudes outside of liquor stores who they should draft. Hey, you really should take Johnny Manziel. Sold. So Zach Cunningham, another player, I'm not sure he's still going to be available, but if he is, perfect fit for the Kansas City Chiefs, linebacker out of Vanderbilt. Kansas City needs to deal with the Raiders, the Chargers, and the Broncos. All right, pretty potent offenses with the Broncos, quarterback situation notwithstanding right now. There's a lot of passing the football in the AFC West. They're going to be looking to add a defensive back. They could use a DB. They could use a cornerback and some youth in their defensive backfield to go alongside Marcus Peters, who's a hell of a young football player. But I think they could address that a little bit later on. You know, the Chiefs were ranked 26th in the National Football League versus the run. For a pretty rock-solid football team, you wouldn't really think about that. Like, that the Chiefs would have that type of, hole, in their armor, so to speak. Chiefs were ranked 26th against the run in the National Football League. They gave up 121 yards a game on the ground. I think Zach Cunningham is the perfect tonic to fix this. I talked about this with the kid Davis from Florida, Gerard Davis, the linebacker, in which he's actually better against the run than he is a rusher, which is kind of rare with these kids nowadays. It's almost like dunking. Everybody rushes. Nobody wants to, tackle and lock up and stuff. Well, you don't want to tackle? Zach Cunningham freaking tackles, man. The guy's a tackling machine. How about this? 125 tackles. 125 tackles. You know, they don't play 16 games in college, guys. Well, who's he doing this against? I don't know. The SEC? Played against the best competition in the country. 125 freaking tackles. The guy's a human trash compactor, literally and figuratively. 16 and a half tackles for losses. We know he's a smart kid. He went to Vanderbilt. Smart player, understands what the offense wants to do. They say that this guy sees gaps before anybody else does. He understands what the other offense is trying to do. And if you're a linebacker, being a smart guy is a big part of it, all right? Being a linebacker is a big, the the aspect and understanding the schemes, the stunts, the audibles, and the gaps is huge. He gets it all. 125 tackles, man. He's a perfect fit for a football team that gets run on a lot. You know, 26 in the NFL, they gave up 121 yards on the ground. The negatives they say about this kid is he's not a killer. Like, when he wraps you up, he's not killing you, so to speak. Like, they're like, well, he could hit people harder. I don't give a 125 tackles. He gets the guy down, all right? You know, it's all, you know, you need a couple of guys that want to injure people, but I don't give a crap, man. If he's running side to side and he's tackling everything in sight, I'm good with it. You know what's good about this kid? If you watch film of him, and I watch a little tape of this guy, actually, he's so athletic, 6'3", 234 pounder, but he's got a great vertical leap and stuff. And you watch tape of this kid, and you see he's dropping back into coverage and, like, taking on guys like O.J. Howard and stuff. He can cover a tight end. He can jam up a wide receiver out of the slot, sort of a hybrid new speed-based football player. NFL comparison, Patrick Willis. Remember Patrick Willis, San Francisco 49ers. Very, very similar, like, dedicated, smart-to-football player mentality. I think Zach Cunningham's going to be a hell of a football player in the National Football League, and I think he's a good fit for the Kansas City Chiefs. Which leads us into the Dallas Cowboys. Drafting 28th overall, the Dallas Cowboys are on the clock. And with the 28th pick in the National Football League draft, the Dallas Cowboys select Garyon Thorne. No, Garyon Conley. Shout out to the Fantasy Sports Network's Garyon Thorne there. Garyon's never getting drafted by the Cowboys, right? That's the best bet ever. They don't say there's locks. The lock is the Buffalo Bills are never winning a Super Bowl, and Garyon Thorne's never getting drafted by the Dallas Cowboys. And I'm never having sex with a Dallas Cowboy cheerleader. Cowboys on the clock, 28th pick. I think they're going to take Garyon Conley here, defensive back out of Ohio State. The Pokes lit it up last year, but they have a few needs that need to be addressed. Like the offensive line, no problem with the offensive line. You know, best offensive line in football. Quarterback, well, you just booted Tony Romo to the curb. Dak Prescott's your quarterback. Wide receiver, you could do better. You know, Cole Beasley, I'm not a big Terrence Williams guy. He makes plays, not very consistent. Brian, etc. I would draft a wide receiver a little bit later on just to push these guys a little bit. And, you know, other than that, really, if you're the Dallas Cowboys, it's all about defense. You got to go defense here. Jerry Jones has talked about wanting to get a pass rusher. Now, Jerry Jones talks openly all the time. Jerry Jones, the head personnel, he's the final decision with this football team. Now, he's been doing it. He's talking about pass rush. You know, he's not happy. The Cowboys need a pass rush. In the 70s, Cowboys always known for that pass rush, so to speak. But, you know, truth be told, they had 34 sacks last year. Ranked 13th in the National Football League. So above average, they actually did manufacture sacks considering all the suspensions and head cases that they had to deal with early in the season on the defensive line. The secondary was a problem. All right, you know, the secondary was a real problem. And Morris Claiborne's gone. Brandon Carr is gone. They lost two starters, basically. They're going to have to do something about this. And Garyon Conley is a perfect fit for them here. Listen, Urban Meyer's been on a freaking roll as of late, producing National Football League players. And it's interesting. Vegas has a prop head-to-head, like Ohio State players versus Alabama players, SEC versus Big Ten, et cetera. We'll give you our NFL draft prop best bets next week. But as far as Conley is concerned, how about this? This is some pretty sick numbers, man. Quarterbacks completed. Well, take a guess if you're watching this right now. Quarterback, what was the percentage of their passes that they completed against this guy? 37%. So quarterbacks completed 37% of the passes thrown at him. Quarterbacks have a QB rating of 13.6 when throwing against him. You don't want to mess with this kid, all right? You don't want to mess with this guy. Everyone's talking about Lattimore, and, you know, Hooker's a hell of a player, but I'm telling you, man, they're a football factory in Columbus. This guy's got extremely long arms as well. They love his long arms. He literally was a basketball player. And, you know, if you heard me and you're watching my mock draft with all the picks, you hear me talk about this basketball guy. They're basketball guys. And, in fact, NFL general managers want multi-sport athletes. They don't want guys who just played football. Like, you know, in the old days, nah, son, just play football, you're going to be a football player. No, no, they want you to run track. They want you to play basketball. They want you to have all these attributes and a little twitch hitches and skills that are going to parlay on a National Football League field for you. This kid has it, all right? This kid has it. Garyon Conley, you know, people are talking about, oh, he's like an Aqib Talib type. He's almost like a Patrick Peterson. He's that freaking athletic. Will he be that good? Time will tell. But I got the Dallas Cowboys going with Garyon Conley, defensive back, with the 28th pick in the draft. And finally, in closing, it leads us to the Green Bay Packers. And, man, did I ever want to put Jabril Peppers here. Me and Cameron, too, Drew, talked about this. Jabril Peppers to the Packers. Jabril Peppers to the Packers. Got to put Jabril Peppers here to the Packers. I couldn't do it. I didn't do it, and I'll tell you why. The Packers are loaded on offense. We know they're loaded on offense. Jordy Nelson's got to stay healthy. They need a running back. Wouldn't surprise me. Maybe they take a Mixon. Maybe they take a P. Ryan. You know what I mean? I think they can get it back a little bit later on in the draft. But what was the deal with the Green Bay Packers last year, guys? Who, what quarterbacks did you want to play in DraftKings every week? Whoever was playing the Packers. Remember for like a 7-8 week run? I mean, hell, Carson Wentz put up huge numbers against these guys. Remember, like, whoever, like, was putting up massive numbers against these guys, you know, in the playoffs, that was their downfall. They couldn't stop the Falcons. Nobody really can, but that's their problem. The Green Bay Packers are ranked 30th in the National Football League versus the pass. They give up 269.2 yards a game. All right? Marlon Humphrey, defensive back, Alabama, Crimson Tide. Perfect fit for the Green Bay Packers here. There's no debating this. The Packers need to address their secondary needs. And who's the best defensive player on the Packers right now? Or defensive back, not the best defensive player. Who's their best DB? This guy. Clinton Dix. The Joker. Ha ha, Clinton Dix. Where did he go to school? Alabama. You get Humphrey, Dix. Listen, I'm mixed on Alabama guys. To me, it seems like offensive linemen from Alabama are underachievers. Seems like the wide receivers are pretty good. The defensive linemen, it's like the big fat guys are hit or miss with Bama. But the athlete guys are good. Like, so, you know, listen, the Packers have had success. Their best defensive back was an Alabama Crimson Tide player. I know that McCarthy has a lot of respect for Saban. He likes Alabama players, a.k.a. Eddie Lacy, before as well, and a.k.a. Eddie Lacy being an enigma, being an Alabama player. But Marlon Humphrey is a perfect selection here. This guy's got blazing speed so fast, he actually won the World Youth Track and Field Hurdles. He's that fast. He was graded the 8th best defensive back in college football by Pro Football Focus as a freshman 2 years ago. He's a little overly aggressive at times because he wants to freaking kill you. Nothing wrong with that. He's a big kid. He can run like crazy. Track kid. Mean-spirited. What's there not to like? What's there not to like? You know what he reminds me of? Another mean-spirited guy, former Buffalo Bill, Antoine Winfield, former Ohio State Buckeye, hell of a defensive back. Marlon Humphrey goes to the Green Bay. Marlon Humphrey. Humphrey. All these stupid names, man. Humphrey goes to the Green Bay Packers. Game time decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues. Twix! Game time decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues. I am Gabriel Morenci. Let's talk some more NBA playoff basketball because it's a thing to do. Let's bring in a former assistant coach with the UMass Minutemen, RDS television analyst, Pete Yiannopoulos joins us. Pete, it's always a pleasure, my man. How you doing?
I'm doing great, Gabe. How are you?
We're doing fine, Pete. One day at a time. And I tell you, it's been a pretty sobering week in the real world. And I tell people sometimes, and as somebody that suffered loss in my life, and you know, I've been doing shows on a daily basis for 16 years, you know, sometimes real life gets in the way of sports, and real life gets in the way of these games that we talk about. And I see that Isaiah Thomas finally releases a statement and talking a little bit more, saying it's been the hardest week of his life. And I see critics. I saw on some websites the headline. It said, don't blame Brad Stevens for Celtics being down 2-0. Blame Danny Ainge. And I'm thinking, what are you jackasses? What are you, stupid? Your best player, the superstar player's sister, 22-year-old girl, dies less than 24 hours before game one, and you don't think it's going to affect the team? You can't blame Ainge. You can't blame Stevens. You can't blame anybody. It is what it is. They're not going to win the series, and sometimes real life gets in the way of these games that we play.
No question, and I really echo those sentiments, Gabe. You know, when you look at people, you know, their lives really depend on sports, and they work and they come home and all day they follow the sports and they look at their teams and they can't wait for that game. But they sometimes forget that these players and these coaches are human beings as well, and they have families and they have children. And can you just imagine, and I know you suffered some losses in your life, and we all have to a certain degree in different levels, but to lose your sister to a car accident just like that, I mean, how can you come back and really perform? And I think it's admirable that Isaiah Thomas really played these last two games. I mean, he has the right to do what he wants. I think that's what Danny Ainge and the Celtics told him. If you want to take time off and be with your family, we're okay with that. If you want to go out and play the games, well, we support you 100%. The Chicago Bulls deserve some credit here as well. I mean, basketball is a game of matchups, and I think when you have the championship pedigree of Rajon Rondo and Dwayne Wade, they live for this moment. They embrace this moment. And I think the backcourt with those two players and Jimmy Butler, the emergence of him taking over these games, I think that's been a key difference in this series. But let's not forget, the Boston Celtics are going and are grieving for their teammate. And I'm glad that Isaiah Thomas should be going back home and spending time with the family, and hopefully we'll be back for game three. You know, against the Bulls.
You know, maybe things become a little easier for the team as well, because as you stated, they're all grieving together. And I was thinking about it. Dwayne Wade was on the court, and he was, you know, a lot of guys in the NBA have gone through things, so it hit them hard as well. I mean, it was, you know, the Bulls did a good job of fighting through it, and not to be a jerk, but at the same point in time, you know, Hoiberg had to tell him before, listen, there's no emotion here. We get it, and it's tough. But this is our lives as well, and it's just the storm that's out there right now. It's just perfect for the Bulls. They're a dangerous team, man, and it's weird, the Bulls, because they were so dysfunctional. I mean, really, they wanted to fire their coach. They nearly left him at the bus station, like Lane Kiffin. You know what I mean? Like, like they hated him. It wasn't working. The offense. Hoiberg wants to push the tempo. They brought him in to be like a Golden State Warriors. Let's push the tempo. Former NBA player, be like Kerr. Everyone likes him. Perfect coach. Everyone hates him. And he's telling the GM, you're not giving me the type of players that, you know, I'm supposed to be, you know, running my system with. They hate him. You know, we're going to trade Jimmy Butler. Rondo hates the world. And then, boom, Dwayne Wade gets hurt, and you figure, oh, these guys are really done. And then, no, since then, they've just come together, and now, like, they're invincible, it seems. It's strange basketball.
It really is, and you look at the Bulls' core just a couple of years ago under Tom Thibodeau. I mean, you had Derrick Rose, you had Joakim Noah, you had Taj Gibson, and now the core is totally changed, and they bring in Wade and Rondo, as I mentioned. But they were very dysfunctional, as you mentioned. I mean, Hoiberg comes from Iowa State, college coach. He inherits a team, and Butler's calling him out publicly, calling him out in the media, calling him out in his face during the games. I mean, Rondo picks a fight with the associate head coach. I mean, he's suspended. I mean, it was a complete and utter mess. But again, it's come together, and in the Eastern Conference, if you avoid the Cleveland Cavaliers, you legitimately have a shot to win any series that you play in. And that's the way the Eastern Conference has been built. I think Chicago right now is just hitting on all cylinders when you look at what they have coming off the bench. I mean, you know, Bobby Portis has been outstanding. You got Zipser, who's been somebody who's taken over the NBA where nobody really knew this guy coming out of college. And now you have a guy like Robin Lopez who steps in, and he's showing that he's more skilled and more dominant than his brother is at Brooklyn. So, hey, Phil Jackson sent them away. They've made some trades. The series ain't over yet, Gabe. You know, it's going to be tough for Boston to win.
That's the thing, Pete, but it's one of those deals basketball, and you know this, it's such a sport driven on emotion.
Right.
That if Boston wins, then suddenly that spark, like they might, you know, explode. You know what I mean? Like it,
yeah,
it could go either. Yeah, you know, it's massive.
It could go
yeah.
either way. It's going to be a sweep, but we might have a long series. But again, I think with Boston, I mean, look, they're a team that has Isaiah Thomas. And is he a star player in the NBA? He has been this season. Is he a superstar? No. The problem with Boston is that they don't have a legitimate number two and number three score. If Al Horford's going to give you 7 points in the playoffs, you're not going to win any series, whether you're playing Chicago or whether you're playing Milwaukee or Atlanta. He's got to step up. Who's that third guy? Is it Jay Crowder? He's been inconsistent. I know with Brad Stevens, they're predicated with moving the basketball and everybody sharing it. But Avery Bradley, Kelly Olynyk, I mean, Marcus Smart, they got to really step up at the whole same time collectively. Listen, they're going to have to dig down very deep here, and they're going to have to play with the lead because Chicago will be rocking at home. And I think Chicago, I mean, they're looking at the draw. If they can get through here, they're playing the winner of Washington, Atlanta. You know what? Maybe Chicago has a pass to the Eastern Conference Finals. But again, Game 3 will be very telling for both these teams.
All right. Well, speaking of Game 3, we got about 5 minutes here, Pete. Speaking of Game 3, pretty big game for the Toronto Raptors here against the Milwaukee Bucks. The Bucks are giving them all that they can handle. The Raptors just don't have a physical matchup to stop the Greek freak. Whatever they're doing doesn't seem to be working. I don't like the body language. And as I tweeted after the game, normally when a team wins in the playoffs, like if you see a player on the street, it's like, hey, good job, man. Go Raptors. Good job tonight. Like if I saw a Raptor last night after the game, after they won, I'd be like, what the hell's wrong with you guys? What the F are you doing? Like, what, you know, what's going on out there? Everything's so hard for them. The body language is bad. I hate, you know, the one thing I dislike, and Casey's a great coach. He does a great job. But the one, his one fault, he doesn't call timeouts during these runs, Pete. It's amazing to me. Like, you'll see a good coach. Championship, man, you know this. Championship caliber coaches. You see Coach K do it in college. It's annoying because it kills the flow of the game. But the other team scores, like, two consecutive baskets, four-point run. Coach K's like, timeout, timeout. He's yelling at everybody. And he's breaking the rhythm and the flow. And if he has to do it again in 2 minutes, he'll do it again. Dwayne Casey stands there and watches these, like, 13-2 runs and then calls timeout. All right, now the lead's gone from 16 to 2. I better call timeout. It's like, dude, you should have called timeout when it cut it to 12.
Yeah, you know what? And when you're talking about the pro level, even the college level, one thing when you're game planning, you want to control the rebounds. You want to control your turnovers. But you want to limit runs from other teams. And that's a given. I think that Dwayne Casey is something that he's been sporadic with. The only guy who really did that with any type of success was letting his players play through these runs was Phil Jackson when he had Michael Jordan, Scottie Pippen, and then we had Kobe Bryant and Shaquille O'Neal. That's the only coach I remember here that would do this with any type of success. But I think with here in Toronto, you make an interesting point. The Leafs win, you know, a couple of games, and, you know, they haven't been in the playoffs. They haven't won a cup in 67, and everybody loves them. Toronto, it seems, I mean, even if they get to the NBA Finals or even if they get to Game 7, people will say, well, what a wasted season. Those guys are always chokers and they never win. I mean, it's hard for the Raptors. They went to the Conference Finals last year. People didn't give them that much respect. And again, here, they lose Game 1. Obviously, Kyle Lowry goes 2-for-11. He bounces back in Game 2, and that's what they're going to need. You know, once they hit 14 three-point shots, they take a lot of them. But I think that, first of all, they got to shoot a decent percentage on the offensive end, but they got to stalk the Greek freak. Antetokounmpo is just a mismatched nightmare. His length, his athleticism, he creates for other guys. And if Tony Snell, if Matthew Dellavedova, if Malcolm Brogdon can knock down some threes, Toronto could be in trouble because of what Antetokounmpo brings to the table in terms of facilitating for his teammates. I still think the Raptors should win this series. JV's got to play a little bit more. When he got a guy like Thon Maker, where he has 125 pounds on him, give him the rock, let him go to work. He did it against Indiana last year in the playoffs. He was outstanding. I think what they're trying to match up Carroll, they're trying to put P.J. Tucker. I think P.J. Tucker has brought an influx of energy and an edge to the Raptors, but I think Casey plays him a little bit too much. This is a journeyman, never played in the playoffs. Stick to what got you there. I like Patrick Patterson. I like Ibaka, but I think JV should be playing more. And you're paying Devarri Carr $16 million. If he's not going to go, I'd rather put Norman Powell there because he's got that exuberance, that athleticism. So the Raptors are in tough. It's going to be a longer series than anticipated.
That's a very, very good point that you raised before we get you out of here. As far as P.J. Tucker is concerned, is P.J. Tucker defensive specialist, tough guy to bring a little bit of attitude, but he's taking big shots late in the game and stuff. Like the other night, you know, he took a three, and I'm thinking – you can't tell me that with 3 minutes left in a tight game that P.J. Tucker taking a three is the shot that you want, Pete. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
is this what you want? Like, really? Is this what it's come to?
No, listen, he missed two key free throws the other night in game two as well.
I know.
I mean, he's not a guy you want touching the basketball. I understand you want him as a defensive specialist, but, hey, on the offensive end, just stay away from the basketball. Try and get those long rebounds, those tip-ins back to the backcourt. But, again, Casey doesn't really trust Valanciunas late. I think he's going to go with Patterson and Ibaka, and then he's got, you know, Lowry, DeRozan, and he's going with P.J. Tucker. I'd like to see him go with Corey Joseph, would give him success, and with Lowry and DeRozan there in the backcourt. But, again, he's got more weapons. He's got more options. This is the deepest Raptors and most talented roster they've had since the existence of their franchise. The first round of the playoffs are tough in any sport, Gabe. You know that. So it's not going to be easy. They're not going to sweep the Bucks. But I think game three is pivotal for them because they want to get back into the league, take back home court advantage, and try and get at least two games in Milwaukee.
You know, well, before we get you out of here, you know the Milwaukee Bucks remind me of? The Oklahoma City Thunder from a couple of years ago. It'll be interesting to see if they're able to keep this talent there. Now, they locked up the Greek Freak. That's a good start. But, you know, they've got a great young nucleus on this basketball team with Parker, with Brogdon, with the Greek Freak. Middleton's a nice player. Monroe's playing well for them. That's a team and a franchise trending in the right direction. But as we know, things can fall apart in a hurry with a franchise in the association.
No question. And I love what Jason Kidd brings in terms of his leadership. And he's learned how to coach, right? He's not a guy that, great players traditionally don't make great coaches.
Did you know that some – I forget which one it was. It was actually – I think it was the Greek Freak and a Ton Maker – they didn't know Jason Kidd played in the NBA. just for the record, if you assume, like, oh, yeah, Jason Kidd, and they must respect and they know. Like, somebody said they didn't know until, like, people cheered him in Brooklyn. they were like, damn, why does everyone love Jason here so much? They're like, he took him to the finals twice. He's like, damn, really? He was a player? Like, they don't know. They don't know, Pete.
Well, he's arguably probably the third best point guard to ever play the game behind Magic Johnson and John Stockton or even Isaiah Thomas. He's definitely in the top four or five point guards of all time. He's the guy that, you know, was Mr. Triple-Double. He was outstanding coming out of Cal. You remember when he beat Bobby Hurley and Grant Hill and Duke in the NCAA tournament with Lamon Murray? I'll never forget that. So,
Lonzo Ball is the new Jason Kidd.
Wow. Let's take it easy on that. He's got a lot to learn and a lot to play at. Jason Kidd, not only was he a great facilitator and such a tough player, you know, he ended up, and his Achilles heel, Gabe, you remember this, he wasn't considered a shooter.
They couldn't shoot
a
three.
His biggest weakness was a shooter, and I think he's third all-time in 3-point field goals made. So, listen, I love Jason Kidd, and he brings that calm, that composure to the present, and he can relate to certain players and say, hey, this is how to go in this situation. But I think Milwaukee, as you mentioned, Jabari Parker is such a key element. He's out for the year. Imagine if he was playing with the Greek Freak. You're talking about two long, athletic, skilled players. And I think they're big. They have size. Tony Snell and Brogdon in the backcourt, just 6'6", 6'7", with the Greek Freak, 6'11". A lot of the lanes are not easy to get there. So Lowry hit some big shots in game two. He's going to have to continue that. DeRozan's been consistent. But they're going to have to need a couple of maybe the 30-point game from DeRozan here because the Bucks are a team to watch not only in this series but the future to come.
Pete Annapolis, RDS Television, always a pleasure. Thanks for the time, Pete.
All right, talk to you soon.
Pete Annapolis with us. So we'll come back with our plays of the day. All right, let's get to our plays of the day. Let's start off in the National Basketball Association, the Cleveland Cavaliers and the Pacers. I'm tempted to take the Pacers here, but LeBron just doesn't lose in the first round, man. The dude hasn't lost in the first round since he had a full head of hair, and that was in like 2012. Pretty insane. I think it's like 19 first-round games in a row. I'm not ready to do it. I would take the Blazers, like, on the road when we're getting points and stuff, but we need to essentially win the game here. But I will take the over. So let's go Cavaliers, Pacers, over 211.5. We got the Toronto Raptors and the Milwaukee Bucks. The Raptors have been terrible in this series, but let's not underestimate the Milwaukee Bucks. The Bucks have a great young roster, real upstart club here. With that being stated, I think they could get caught at home. I think the emotion of playing at home, they can get a little bit caught up in a moment. I think the Raptors, who are a good road team and a veteran team, are going to play a little bit better away from their home court. I like the Raptors as underdogs. +1.5, no opinion on the total. And as far as San Antonio and Memphis is concerned, this is a tough game. You know, the Grizzlies have been bitching. You know they're going to play better. It's at home. I think San Antonio is probably going to beat them, but I don't want to mess with it. But the total is just too low for me to pass on. Let's go over 185. In a National Hockey League, they're going back and forth with the Blue Blue Rouge and the Rangers. Let's go with the Habs in this spot. -150. Total's 4.5. No opinion. Too low. Chicago Blackhawks. I don't think they're going to get eliminated like this. It can't end like that. Blackhawks a win, +110. And the San Jose Sharks, man, they smelt the blood in the water. They took advantage, and it's going to continue. Sharks, get it done as road dogs, +110. Other than that, you're on your own. May the winners be yours.